Intertextual Cardboard Experience.
Hello and welcome to Intertextual Cardboard Experience. Kind of a different episode today, a hybrid show of sorts. And well, if you can't tell, it's going to be a just me, but I didn't want to necessarily title this one a vodcast, which would be, you know, the fourth one in that series of it just being me, because there is an interview in it, but the transcription or the audio retelling of that interview is just going to be done with me as well. And in a second, you'll kind of find out why that actually works out pretty well, outside of the fact that, again, it's just me. So for the sake of titling, numbering, this is episode 24, but I'll put that four in parentheses, and that's just a nod to the fact that this is kind of podcast number four. But getting into the weeds of arbitrary titling and numbering and some of the goofy stuff that I wind up doing with the show, I might change the way that those are seasoned, quote unquote. And I'll get into that in a second. So I'll just start off with the title. The title today is Let's Get Digital, an Asynchronous Interview with UFM, BGA Developer, and a One-Year Celebration. So we'll start at the back end of that and kind of do some of the intro work for the show, and then we'll go from that intro into the interview, which I don't think is going to be super long. And then I have some thoughts that I have, because I really don't want to interrupt the kind of the Q&A session. It kind of works like a Reddit AMA of sorts, where all of the questions were set up by me and then answered by UFM with some really neat insight and some answers that I would say were relatively unexpected too. Just kind of some things I'm like, oh, I didn't think that's what the response was going to be, but I guess that's why it makes it interesting, because if I had known what it was going to be about, well, then I wouldn't have had to ask. But
just one really quick interruption. I don't want to make the episode longer. As you can see, it's a pretty lengthy episode. There's a lot going on. But immediately listening back to it after having had said all of those words and just kind of processing these thoughts for some time, I think it's a good one. Well, I mean, I hope so. I've been, you know, negative on some of my solo episodes in various ways for various reasons, but the balance, the pacing, I hope everything feels like solid, and I hope that you're able to listen to it, because there's some good stuff in there, especially from UFM in the middle portion. And then hopefully you can just kind of think about some of the thoughts being presented, listen till the end, have fun, and I just appreciate it. So thank you.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second, and we'll just touch on the one-year celebration. So technically, this episode is going to be released on August 12th, 2024, and the first episode of the show, episode one with John Cloudis, was aired, debuted on August 21st, 2023. So it's not quite 1 year. So a little early in the celebration, but 2 weeks after this episode comes out, so 26, it's going to be after that 1 year mark, and that's going to be with somebody. So live interview, not asynchronous interview, getting to talk a non-vodcast or non-hybrid episode. So therefore, wouldn't make sense to take a ton of time from that episode in order to go through that mini celebration. But so 1 year in, and if we're kind of just thinking about episodes on the whole, I have 23 guest interviews with a little asterisk, and kind of talk about that in a second. And then well, we have this hybrid episode, which could be another asterisk on top of that asterisk, and then, you know, three podcasts, a series intro, which was like a, I didn't put out as a full episode, as kind of like episode zero, and then the first kind of asterisk was my yearly review, which I think is definitely the worst of the kind of like four things that I've done by myself. I think the other ones were a lot more focused, and I think this one's going to be way more focused, especially due to the fact that it is an interview, just not a talking one, one-on-one. And so, yeah, I counted myself as a guest in that because I didn't order that one differently, but all the other ones became the podcast, so I guess I was a guest on my own show more than one time. And, you know, technically, if I introduce the shows the way that I do, like, you know, Spectacular 17th or whatever alliterative or wordplay-y type of thing that I try to wind up doing, and I have a repeat guest in the future, which I really hope to do. I mean, I would love to have repeat episodes with, like, every single person I've talked to, because I enjoyed each and every one of them. I think maybe a follow-up interview to some of the topics that were talked about in some episodes would work better to have a follow-up. If I introduce somebody as the, you know, fantastic 44th guest, and they were already a guest, I don't know. We're getting into some bit that nobody cares about, but that is what it is. Long story short, you know, kind of 23, quote-unquote, normal, as normal as I can make an episode to be, and then a few of these vodcasts, and I'm just, you know, blown away by the community in general, just being able to reach out to guests and have such, like, gracious and graciousness and willingness to chat with me, kind of especially, you know, out of nowhere. I think, you know, as I can see, more and more people do listen to it, and I think the feedback has all been really positive from both, you know, listeners and guests, and that makes me, you know, extremely happy and grateful as well, of course. And yeah, that's really what I got. I don't think I have any huge changes for the year ahead. I hope I can kind of get my scheduling a little bit better. You know, I was thinking that summer was going to be a bit more normal, but I guess, you know, summer two is where there is a lot of the convention, so I think some communication there got a little goofy, and I didn't go to any cons this summer. Maybe I could have tried to set up something live there, but that's not really what people would be going to them for anyway. And yeah, I traveled in the Midwest, where I'm located, quite a bit more than I expected to, and that just definitely threw a wrench in, you know, what I was doing. I worked on some different projects and whatnot, and it's been an awesome summer, and I've had a few, basically, over for thinking summer, whatever that means to people in different spots in the world, Northern Hemisphere, Midwest United States, summer from like June to, well, now August. I had some really awesome guests on as well, and I'm just looking forward to continuing that. If I make a change or I think of doing something different, I kind of try to peel back that curtain as much as I can and give people notes and say what I'm thinking, just see if it makes sense, bounce that idea, put it out in the universe, and if it's only me responding to me with that thought, well, I guess I have that to work with. So yeah, that's the 1 year celebration. I'll probably talk about it in the kind of quick support section at the end of the intro before getting in the interview. But thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this journey, and I think for being able to set up interviews with like extremely busy people and different parts of the world and having like weird schedule with teaching and coaching at times in spots and just like never being home during those stretches and making this all work was just way more than I expected, way more than I could even hope for. And the hope is just to be able to, continue and talk to different people and get to the point where I'm playing all sorts of different games to, reach out to different like designers and people working in the space in different ways. And having a developer for Board Game Arena today is an interesting side to the board gaming, hobby space as well. Okay. There's going to be another giveaway at the end. So when I get to the end of me going through the different ideas of this episode, hopefully I take the time to say it in a way that makes sense, because the very first one that I did was on that yearly wrap up, which was technically a non-vodcast normal episode. And I think the way I described that actually did make sense. So the responses on the response form actually came in, so I could, do a normal giveaway with like a lot of things to respond to and think about. And then I think the last couple that I did, I just took for granted that that had been the method, and yeah. So I'll try it a little bit differently. That was all done through a Google form, so thanks to anybody who has filled out that Google form. That is going to exist. So it's a feedback form. It just kind of asks like what you like about the show, if there's anything that you would want to see with it, and that it could literally be anything. If you're like, hey, I think you should really reach out to this creator, this person who's doing that, whatever it might be, I'd love to hear it. The, like I said, feedback that I've received in different ways has all been really positive, and I appreciate that. So that's going to exist, but it's not going to be the way that this giveaway goes. So I will explain that at the end, and it's going to be a little bit different because, well, it's a digital episode. So yeah, stick around if you want to potentially win something free. Oh yeah, one kind of other technical note, the outro. So for that next episode, hopefully after 2 weeks from release of this, the 2 weeks from the 12th, I'm hoping that the outro is slightly tweaked, because I just am trying to do more work in social media, and again, I just really haven't been around. So sometimes I'm on like Twitter or Blue Sky or Instagram or TikTok, still only the two TikToks, and just trying to like put things in different spaces. Definitely could be more active. I think the algorithms would be kinder if that was the case, but check them all out. They all are in the show's info notes. So if you want to see like what I'm up to, either personally or gaming wise, it's a puzzle. Like some things are posted to one spot, some are posted to the other. You put it all together and you can see what's up. So, quickest plug ever, like I've tried to express gratitude, well, as much as I possibly can all the time, because I, like I said, couldn't be more thankful to everybody who's been a part of this. Thanks for listening. Share it with friends. If you could, like whatever platform, Spotify, Apple, do the likes, do the comments. Cool, great. And I mentioned that with like that 1 year celebration, these interviews that I do are done through Zoom. So, I mean, honestly, that's like the biggest expense that kind of goes into the show. Obviously, not going to ask you to support my game buying, but I guess nonetheless, that would go towards this as well. So, I do constantly want to like think about new things for the show. I just put the show on YouTube, so I have like a YouTube channel, but it's literally just a podcast right now. And if I keep creating different things in different ways, I would love to think about YouTube as a place to go as well. So like equipment, making things good. Yeah, that would be what the support's going to. So 100% would be going towards the show. This is as independent as independent media can be. Obviously, the people that take their time to interview, like that makes it a nice collaboration, like each all these kind of mini fun collaborations. But yeah, I mean, I don't do reviews, so not getting review copies or anything like that. And I'm happy with Intertextual Cardboard experience so far, and I know I'm going to be happy with it moving forward. So that's the 1 year celebration. That's the mini plugs at the end, giveaway to celebrate as well at the end, doing that differently. Hopefully I actually explain that well. So if I don't, reach out via email, also in the show notes, and I can get you clarification as quickly as possible. So let's talk about the main core of this episode though, and that's thinking about digital adaptations of board games. So I am definitely not an expert in this. I'm not an expert in anything really. I definitely play a good amount of digital implementations, primarily on the site Board Game Arena. So first and foremost, I think a lot of people who might be listening to this are familiar that there are different ways to play games online. And if you're not, well, hopefully you learn a little bit something. If not from me, definitely from our guest, who I'll be relaying their responses to you. Like I said, I definitely learned some things there, but just some things to consider and think about as well. So Board Game Arena is a website, and there's a premium version. I could have put down how much that premium subscription for the year is. I don't think it's super crazy, but you don't even need to really have that if you want to play even some of the, like locked premium games. So if you wanted to play something that was premium, you could have somebody who was or had that subscription invite you to one of those games and you'd be able to play it. Some other, and I mean, I'm going to be missing like a lot, so I'm just going to be kind of like highlighting a few. So, Board Game Arena is definitely a big one. Yukata, if I am pronouncing that correctly, I think it's yukata.de. I actually, again, for kind of the sake of this episode, my normal amount of online and digital gaming, which is typically pretty steady, increased. So I started playing a couple more games there. I'd really only played a couple in the past, and I like that one, free as well. And we can think about kind of some of the pros and cons of that in a second. Then there's Tabletopia. Experience with Tabletopia is probably the least of the four that I'm really going to highlight. So four in Board Game Arena, Yukata, Tabletopia, and Tabletop Simulator. It could be a tie, not a ton of experience in Tabletop Simulator. I think I mentioned that before. But if you're like looking to do board games to putting them on a table, well, obviously Tabletop Simulator is going to kind of try to like 3D represent that. And I think Tabletopia is as well. I think the biggest catch or kind of hold up that I had with that one was the times in which I was trying to play games on Tabletopia were also times where I was trying to learn those games that I was playing. And that's kind of a mixed bag. I think one of the perks of these sites, or primarily something like Board Game Arena or Yukata, is the rules are built into the site, so you can't break them. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to internalize them well right away, but there have been different ways in which I've approached learning games on Board Game Arena, which I think some are better than others. Maybe I'll watch a video Maybe I'll read the rules, or maybe I'll read the rules overview, or maybe I'll just, for the sake that I was invited to play, I'll click around, and then I'll like go back and look at some of that stuff and learn it. But I think there are definitely some where, just like the way that the game is set up, you can kind of just play and learn from what you can and can't do. Like you can kind of figure it out. That's interesting. That's definitely a perk. Like if especially if the people that you're engaged in that game with, if they're kind of doing that same thing, you can learn it together. And that is neat as well. Tabletop Simulator. Then I think a couple of the adaptations or games that I've played on there have been some of the fully like automated ones. So if like you click something, it actually does it, as opposed to like the manipulation of moving the pieces or like having your cards and doing what that does. I think if you've listened to the shows and the episodes with the interviews, you'll have heard that some designers do use Tabletop Simulator, and it seems like there's a lot of perks for that. Say if you wanted to like swap out a component or change the cards, obviously you don't need to like re-prototype that in a way that is physically demanding. I think some of the drawbacks that we'll get to in a second is it's not like the physical experience still, but especially during the pandemic or the lockdown portion of the pandemic, because I guess you know what I mean. And I think that like necessitated digital play, so that was a good outlet too. And I think it also helped, the designers in that time be able to get play testers and work on it. Some people really like the platform. Some people think of it more as a necessary evil, or maybe just a necessary compromise more so than a necessary evil. And some people just won't use it. I don't think I'm in the I won't use it camp. I just haven't found the need to have to yet. So not ruling it out. I do have it, and I've played a couple games on it. I tried setting up a solo Gloomhaven campaign, and that didn't work out the best. I think I played some Fantasy Realms against AI, and I don't think that most of the games do have AI, but I tried that out because I saw that was the case. So I just wanted to see how it went, and it worked, and it was neat. So that is that. Okay. For the actual interview, so you don't have to hear my opinions, because I guess I'll kind of sandwich this interview. I just wanted to introduce some of the different ones. So if you're unfamiliar, you hadn't heard of any of those, or maybe you hadn't heard of one of them, you could definitely look into them. Furthermore, I know that there are different sites for war games. Like none of them are coming to my head right now. I know that for some card games, there's like playingcards.io. So people will use that. Same with like 18xx games. Vassal is something. Never done anything on that. But again, just kind of wanted to give a little bit of an introduction and kind of highlight the ones that I'm most familiar with, even if my experience with a couple of them is not the highest. So yeah, something like Tabletopia, where I've tried to learn the games and it is more in that sandbox style and makes it a little bit trickier to learn. I think now I might want to go back and see the functionality of it with a game that I do know, because there are definitely games on that site that I am familiar with, just to see how that goes. And then finally, I guess one of the things that I was going to talk about is kind of Steam implementation. So taking something that is a board game and making it more of like a video game, or just a fitting the interface of something that you could play on your PC or Steam Deck, or however you play your PC games, that would work. And then obviously, some games have digital apps for mobile Some games exist on, console as well. So those are video games that have been kind of even, more animated, automated, having, kind of different art and making it look different for that space. So I've definitely played games in that capacity as well. And I'll talk about that in a bit. But as I was stating, we are now to the interview. So I was in a correspondence with board game arena developer UFM. I was thinking about kind of digital implementations for quite some time, and I was playing a lot of live or asynchronous versions of trick-taking games and ladder climbing slash hand shedding types of games, and just trying to look at the developers, like who was making them. I saw like UFM, UFM, UFM for all these games that I was playing. I'm like, wow, the timing for this is really great because I am increasing my digital plays, kind of seeing more discourse about digital implementations online on like Discord, Reddit, Board Game Geek, probably elsewhere too. I think the amount of things that I read or consume related to board games, sometimes too much. Actually, kind of taking a pause. Not a pause, but trying to be more well-rounded, I guess. But yeah, so yeah, it was definitely something that I've been thinking about. So just kind of the timing and thinking about it, and I was like, well, okay, hey, UFM, I reached out. I said, like, would you be curious, or would you be willing to do an interview? And with some correspondence back and forth, we worked out to do it this way. It's just like what fit the best, and I had like some good kind of like pre-chatting and post-chatting about things in general, and then I had kind of like a bulk Q&A session in which they graciously went through all questions and answered them. So I have these kind of clumped into some different categories. So I'll probably just introduce category, say the question, and for the most part, okay, here's the thing. I'm going to try to like directly quote everything as much as I can. I'm not going to, if I change anything, like when you're reading an interview with somebody, and then you kind of have like you see like sick, or you see some brackets, and that's just kind of like ways in which the things would be changed. That's what I might do. So it's not like I would be indirectly citing the thing here, but it would just be like the minorest tweaks for the sake of having the way that it sounds in the Q&A and me saying it aloud, make the most sense. But yeah, again, I'm not going to change the words, if that makes sense. So yeah, I've never actually thought a ton about taking somebody's type response for an interview and saying them aloud in a way that keeps the integrity. But being said, I obviously wouldn't change the integrity at all. But yeah, thinking about like the ways in which, yeah, like again, like sick and bracketing and like that, kind of the way that it exists in physical form, the way that people manipulate that and taking it to the me saying it aloud thing. But again, sometimes go on to these things for like a hair too long. So the short of it is I'm reading UFM's responses and potentially kind of like tweaking some things, but not. Anyway, for the basics, the first question that I asked was, how many games have you developed on Board Game Arena? And the number is 101 games on their own. some things currently being like worked on, and then they've also revamped or fixed some other games as well. How much have you worked in other platforms such as Yukata, Tabletopia, Tabletop Simulator, etc.? So the ones that I'd mentioned. And the answer is none. So as we can kind of put like one and two together, that's a lot of games solely for board game arena, but none anywhere else. So kind of due to that, I actually had a follow-up question. And that was basically why haven't you worked in any of those other spaces? And for Yukata, there were two reasons. The game platform does not enforce a time limit, and there's no localization. So yeah, that's interesting because the no time limit thing, I think, could be tricky for a player, but I haven't really thought about it from the like development standpoint, because yeah, I played a handful of games on Yukata now, and I haven't had any of the issues. The people I've played with there have all been really great, played some good games, and yeah, I get the email that it's my turn. I go on when I see it, and then I take the turn, and if I requested that we're playing one turn a day, everybody's playing at least one turn a day, and if the request is that we're playing a few turns, everyone's played, you know, a few turns, and that has been awesome. But I think without having thought about it previously, that could even be more stressful from the development side of it. Tabletopia, too heavy as a sandbox platform. The program uses too much in regards to resources. And for Tabletop Simulator, the note was that it's better than Tabletopia for the sake of development, but they don't like sandbox platforms. So I guess, you know, those interestingly are the ones that I've kind of stayed away from like a playing standpoint. And that's where UFM has kind of stayed away from a development standpoint. And there's zero chance that I could develop a game. So as tricky as it would be for me to like maybe manipulate some of the playing in those different spaces, I'm going to know that developing is going to be even harder. I also, just kind of looking at UFM's board game arena page, there a lot of like, you know, the 101 games that I saw, and there's also a note on translations. So I asked, how many translations have you created for online implementations of board games? And they said around 97 or 98% of the whole Korean board game arena system and games. So I don't actually know what the full number for that is necessarily, but that's crazy. That's very cool. And just kind of like my final like feedback to that, before going from like the basics to some background questions, would be the fact that it's like, you know, obviously in a lot of the early, the bulk of who I've talked to have been designers, and interestingly, a couple of the other people that, you know, create podcasts or YouTube videos in Taylor Reiner and Liz Davidson are doing game design, or were working on like game design, but, you know, are doing even more so, or having more kind of like announced and doing more since like the year ago that kind of chatted. But again, a lot of designers trying to think about different spaces. So I've talked to artists, I've talked to designers, and designers that do like development, you know, all sorts of different stuff. But you know, a lot of people are putting in work into the board games that we enjoy, and different ways in which we do enjoy them, such as sites like Board Game Arena or these digital implementations. So just kind of like a huge shout out to to like everybody who is putting in that work and is making things accessible. In this case, taking all these games and making them accessible for people playing the game with the Korean like language and that translations and everybody else. So, I mean, again, part of my exploration moving forward in the show is definitely going to be trying to find even more people that are doing different things. And this is, I think, a really unique thing that maybe that I guess I hadn't really thought about a ton. Like, I obviously knew that somebody was making these implementations, and I know that there's times where I'd play something like, wow, this is like a really good board game arena implementation, and I was kind of like in awe, and I clicked on the page, but it hasn't like manifested into anything like this until now. So yes, thank you, UFM. Thank you to everybody who is doing that work for this and everything, making the hobby great for people who want to enjoy it. Okay, so that's kind of the all the crazy amount of work, and I will kind of see when UFM started that development. So this is like a ton of work in a very short period of time, as we'll find out in a second. So I had some background questions, and one of the questions that I have was, what board game made you fall in love with gaming? UFM said, I'm not sure. I just enjoyed all games with good tabletop role playing friends. So just kind of an always things there. Then I had another question. I said, what types of board games are your favorite? They said, my focus changes frequently, currently solo games and co-op games. However, my most favorite game is D&D and Pathfinder. I've been running my own campaigns for more than 10 years. I then asked, I kind of just said this a second ago, what prompted you to want to start creating digital implementations of games? How long have you used online platforms before starting to work in them? I said, I just wanted to share some games I want to share some games I like it or liked at the time. And then I started implementing games 3 years after my BGA registration. So then I kind of asked some questions that were specific to development. And a lot of these questions, it's kind of my typical multi-question clumped into one. So UFM did a nice job of kind of like responding to all of them in one. And I will go through this section on some specifics. How long does the average game take for you to develop? Which one was the fastest? And how quickly were you able to finish that? Which one is the slowest? And how long did that take you? UFM said, I can't give you specifics as it vastly differs among games. Some simple trick-taking games took 2 or 3 hours, as I was able to reuse many codes from other games I implemented already. The definition of the slowest varies by including any sort of a hiatus. So if it does stop, I started the project in middle of 2022 and finished in March of 2024. If it does not, then Regicide would be the longest. It took a month due to some adjusting during the development and addition of a lot of variants. Then I asked, which project provided the most challenges along the way? Which development are you currently the most proud of? Responses for this are Regicide and for Northwood for both questions. The latter is still in the development stage. The base game is already available. So, hey, awesome game. I talked about for Northwood, at least in some capacity, at least once on the show. So that's available. If you're looking to play it, go check it out. But UFM is still working on some scenarios. Then I had the question. I said, your work for Board Game Arena is a labor of love, as in you're not currently accepting commissions for your projects. How does the process go of deciding which games you want to or are able to work on? Do publishers or designers reach out to you? Do you ever reach out to anyone because you really want to see a digital version of a game? And then the response, sometimes I find the license available. BGA internally manages a license list. Sometimes I try contacting them, sometimes they contact me. But the most important thing is the publisher must allow implementing the game on BGA and must be responsive enough. Publishing the implementation requires their approval, obviously. Also, they have to supply some assets like component images and anything else kind of along those lines. So, yeah, definitely. Well, again, none of this stuff I have any internal knowledge of, but that's kind of like an interesting that is an interesting process for sure. Just thinking about could be UFM having reached out, having been reached out, but in order to make it happen, obviously that their approval is needed, but also just that, as stated, the responsiveness as an element of the success too. Okay. Then I asked, do you currently play more games online or in person? And for me right now, it's definitely online. I've been doing a lot of homework for this episode, but that's not a question for me. Anyway, UFM says, actually, I don't play board games online much nowadays. I'm spending most of my weekend free time with my D&D campaigns. Hey, seems like a really good use of time, so that is awesome. On my next question, how many of the games that you've developed did you own first? Zero. I'm serious. I don't bother with physical games as I don't have enough time to play in person. That's really interesting. So overall, not trying to jump in here. I think in this next section with the opinions, which is going to be coming in after some of the specifics section, I'll maybe try to finish the episode with some of my thoughts before getting to that giveaway. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, definitely some unexpected responses, but I think that's really neat. And I think it's that like a perk, if we're kind of thinking of like pros and cons, which is something that's going to come up in the opinions section. One thing to consider is, having the access to being able to play games digitally could make your collection a little bit smaller if you're willing to just play them in that particular space. I think, well, I've kind of read in various spots, thinking about this idea of digital games, that on the whole, publishers are going to have increased sales from Board Game Arena implementation. I don't know if I found like the most credible sources for that, but that seems to be the online consensus. And personally, this again, kind of like my main interjection into the interview before getting to some of my thoughts later. I think about my own collection. I've definitely bought games that I've played on Board Game Arena, and I'm like, wow, I like this game. I purchased it. I've also done this thing where, I've played a game on Board Game Arena and I realized that, like, okay, this is not going to be a game that I buy. Also, pretty normal. And I've done a thing where either Board Game Arena or Yukata, and I'll just bring up the specifics now. I've had instances where I have the game and it's just not really getting played. And I've talked about my taste before. I mean, I'll play anything. I love board games, so I'm not particularly picky, but when it comes to my multiplayer, like in-person gaming, typically tend to like stay away from some of the mid-weight conversion euro types of games because a lot of them have at least a decent amount of complexity. and some of them are lacking some of that like more direct interactions that I just tend to favor when it comes to in-person gaming. I play, you know, games online. I play a lot of solo games. So I think I kind of look for different things in different games. So a couple games that I owned, I learned multi-handed and played and liked. I thought they were really neat games. Are my two most recently played games on Yukata in the Red Cathedral and Lorenzo Il Magnifico. And, you know, I had them and I'm like, oh, like, well, for Lorenzo, I had it, played it multi-handed, saw that as on Yukata. I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, I'll be able to play it here. And then I came to the realization, it's like, okay, wow, like, I'm not really going to be playing this game in person. Like, I just, it's not what I want to get to with it. So, you know, I sold it and then, you know, continued playing it on Yukata. And then Red Cathedral hasn't happened yet, where I haven't sold it or, you know, given away or anything like that. But I played it multi-handed. I played the solo as well, and both were, you know, like, good experiences. I think the game is cool. The, like, the dice system with the roundel is neat. But then I played it online. I'm like, hey, you know, there are some interaction points. There are definitely things that you want to try to get to on the cathedral in terms of building. And if you move a dice, well, obviously that's going to move it. And the way that the other people can use it is going to change. But again, it's a conversion light to midweight Euro, and that's not what I typically tend to play. So the ability to hop on and play a game over, you know, 4 or 5 days with somebody is fun. Like, I really enjoyed that experience, and I'm fine with getting rid of that game because I probably haven't played it in a couple years. So yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of like where I'm at with that question of, well, I don't develop games, but thinking about games and collections, I know it could go, you know, one of a few ways, and it seemingly, you know, people will try a game and then buy it. And I've done that a lot. A couple of the recent games that I played a lot of online were Gnar and Far Away. And I bought them. I haven't played them in person. I've sometimes introducing games or just asking people if they want to play, I'll have a few. Maybe give a pitch, maybe just have them pick based on the looks of the box or the components, and then go from there. And those haven't made it into the live play list, but I know they will. Definitely going to stick around the collection for a bit because I think they're fun games, and I bought them because of playing them online first, and I know that there are other instances of that happening as well. Okay. That actually knocks out a decent chunk of some of the things I'm going to say after the interview anyway. So enough of me rambling. Back to the thoughts. So then I said, if you didn't own a game in advance, and this question was actually pre-made, so I didn't know that the answer was zero. I said, do you only use the rule book, or are there any other methods you seek to learn the game, play through videos, etc.? UFM says, basically, I implement games I know well already, unless the game is a novelty. The publisher or the designer gives a rule document as well. If needed, I ask them directly. So, definitely a unique way in kind of like internalizing the rules. Like, either have had that experience or working, learning it, and developing it at the same time from the rules document. Again, more and more skills that I do not possess. Okay, so the final category is what I titled kind of like opinions. And, you know, a lot of the things that I asked here, I've maybe commented on, some I haven't. So I'll wrap this up and then I'll maybe get to some of my final thoughts, which should be relatively brief because I've said some of the things already. And then we'll move on. What are some of the benefits of online board gaming? So UFM said, easier to find players and play together. For sure, less setup time and less rules issues, especially with complex games. Yeah, 100%. Like, if somebody's already set up the rules to make you have to follow them, that winds up, well, maybe not being an issue for like the flow of the game, but could be an issue for you if you don't really know the rules and mess up, but that is what it is. Then I asked, what's lost, or at least what could be lost when playing a game online? UFM says, I cannot explain it well, but in my opinion, the unique ambiance of playing games in real life with friends cannot be replaced by online games. Very, very fair. Yeah, there's definitely a social element, even if you are playing it online and you've got like Zoom up. Or some type of audio or whatever it might be. Yeah, I think there's different levels of magic that games can create, and some of the magic is in the game itself. A lot of the magic is the people that you're playing with. So I get that. Next question. What type of games are best for asynchronous play? I don't play async games nowadays, but probably games which allow simultaneous actions across players, such as roll and write games. And again, I kind of concur. So a lot of the games that I do play asynchronously are roll and write games. What types of games are worse for asynchronous play? Games with tons of interruption abilities, games requiring frequent communications, trick-taking games, draw and discard games. Yeah, definitely some categories I have thought about and some that I haven't there. Is having an undo button and or a confirm button, turn button, mandatory? Response, yes, especially in mobile. I always add one. Most games are fine with an optional confirmation button, but some games which offer complex actions require an undo button. I'll touch on that in a second. Then I said, do you log your board game arena plays on BoardGameGeek? And the response was never. I didn't ask if a few of them logs their plays on BoardGameGeek in general. Maybe that would have been a good clarifying question from me. Then the second to last question I have is, do you play any digital implementations of games on Steam? And they said, then I said, if so, what feels different about these compared to something like Board Game Arena? Also, if so, do you log those plays? And they said, I own Tabletop Simulator and Tabletopia, but I don't play there. And finally, this is a kind of a goofy question with a funny response from them. I said, why do you feel people are so opinionated when it comes to some thoughts regarding online playing of board games? And UFM said, nowadays people are so opinionated on anything and everything. Why should board games be different? With a nice parenthetical shrug. So, yeah, I think just kind of the sheer amount of work with all of those implementations, the duration in which it took to make some of those games, just due to some complications or breaks, or developing a game and going back to it and working on the like scenarios for something like For Northwood, helping people redevelop games, doing all those translations, if I didn't say that already, and not having these games first physically before working on the BGA developments. And all other insights shared. When I read them, I was like, oh, wow, okay. And yeah, there's definitely like a lot to chew on there. I did try to add some minor feedback to some of the questions, like if I was kind of chatting back and forth. I had talked about the one bit about one a couple bits about some kind of like the pros and cons as well, and thinking about how online plays could impact one's collection, specifically thinking about my own methods, because that's what I have to draw on the most. But I'll just kind of like run down some other of the opinions and just kind of like insert some of my thoughts, especially because I've been playing like a good amount of online games on Board Game Arena lately, a little bit on Yukata, and even kind of hop back into Steam. So, as stated, UFM mentioned that it's easier to find players and play together when it comes to online board gaming, as well as like the bit about less setup time and the rules issues, which I commented as well. So yeah, 100% on all of those thoughts. I, depending on the game, sometimes, you'll run into situations where you create an invite for a game, and if it's like a lesser played game at that time, you're not getting paired up with people, or you have set up for a four player game and two people join, and then that fourth person doesn't, and then the game just never materializes, and that can kind of be a bummer then too. But yeah, other benefits, I know that I mentioned it in a previous vodcast, but Eric from the Board Game Dojo, that episode that we did, we'd kind of been in communication before that episode, before we chatted there, but have been in more communication since, and we'll communicate on Discord. But honestly, primarily, we'll kind of play through Board Game Arena. We've set up a live play, and that's a fun thing too. There are other friends that I have in other places around the state, country, and world that I'll be able to play games with primarily asynchronously, but it's nice to kind of take a turn, send a message, or even play a couple games and then start sending messages, just kind of depending on how that communication's going. And I think that's like a perk as well. I've said some other things, such as being able to learn games, just being able to get exposure to different games, and obviously plenty of other perks there too. I think the main thing that is lost when playing a game online is definitely what was stated. UFM's response, kind of that hard to describe, in-person feeling. And I think, sometimes I might come down on a game like a little too harshly if I am only thinking about the mechanics of it from playing it online, as opposed to having some of the fun in-person experiences that could really bring out like a different side of a game. There are definitely going to be other games that like suffer a little bit more from being played online only. And I think most people in most contexts are going to wanting to play a game in person as opposed to like online. But like I said, I've seen a lot of discourse, and there's some people that prefer like some different games in different contexts online. I again, very probably like corner cases, edge cases. But yeah, on the whole, like whenever I play games, I know that I'm sometimes giving a game a like an unfair viewpoint of it if my first play of it is digital. But then I also try to put it in like my mental space of like, okay, let's think about it in this way. I've played, Santa Monica in person, and some of the fun of that game is kind of like marveling at the art, seeing the way that your little tableau and having the tourist visit like a donut shop or a skate park, and seeing like just kind of like the funny touches, and realizing the Santa Monica pier that you're building in comparison to your opponent's is part of the fun of it. But like, so when I played it on Yukata, like some of those things did not happen. And then, I know that it's like, okay, well, I like this game and I did like playing it online. It wasn't the same experience. So then I have to like think about the fact that I know that if I'm playing a game online first and I didn't have that experience, like, what is it that this game What about this game could be brought out when being played live? So I try to be turbo fair. I typically don't write off many games in general as ones that I dislike. And I don't think that just playing something on Board Game Arena or digitally is going to make me dislike a game and not try to look for things that I might like in person, but obviously lacking some of that in-person experience just isn't going to give me that complete picture, and I get that too. The response for like types of games that are best for asynchronous play, UFM mentioned some that allow simultaneous actions or roll and writes. I think those work like well. A lot of the games that I play are kind of some of those midweight Euro-y conversion things. We're going into the next question, ones that don't have a ton of interruptions, that helps too. So sometimes there is kind of going to be that middle space of like a midweight Euro, but it does have some interactions where somebody does something and then all three people have to respond, then it goes back to the person who took that turn. That could get a little disrupt the flow or make things take a little bit longer than necessary. But yeah, I play one of my more played games on Board Game Arena is Trois. And we'll kind of scoot ahead because I think, you know, what types of games are worse for asynchronous play is maybe one of the things that, like, I agree with what was stated, the interruption ability for sure. Maybe the UFM said trick taking games, and I think that's a contentious bit. Some people will like those games, but I think more people are definitely on UFM side with this one. I haven't fully formed because I'll just kind of do whatever. As long as I'm playing, I'm happy. That's where I'm at. In person, digital, happy me, I'll play. If I realize that a particular game doesn't work the best asynchronously, I'll bake that note on Board Game Geek. So I do log my Board Game Arena plays, going to another question later on, and I'll hopefully remember it. And if I forgot, then I'll go back and see. It's like, oh yeah, I didn't want to play this one asynchronously. But yeah, so the having an undo button or a confirm button being mandatory, you know, I think the implementation of Trois on Board Game Arena is solid. It does not have that. This was not a game breaking thing, but I meant to place one of my citizens on the, I don't know which area of the board is called. It's like the where you place your red workers, which would then unlock you red dice. And I had all my citizens kicked out of that area. Therefore, I needed to get one back. So the next turn, I would have red dice to do the actions that I wanted. And I just had like a little glitch in my browser screen. And instead, I clicked my die on a card where I already had a worker. And it was the one where you can, if you, okay, this is very specific, if you like activate that card in multiples of two. So if you have like a six, you'd get this three times, then you'd roll another die, which is automated by the game, so you don't even get to roll it. And if it hits like four through six, or even three through six, you're able to place a cube on an event card. That's not what I wanted to click. It clicked on it, didn't roll what would have hit for the event card. I didn't get it. It was just like turbo anticlimactic because I wanted the worker in the spot, and instead literally got nothing, didn't even get to roll the die, and it was very blah. I don't think the overall standings of the game were impacted. I was pretty close to taking third out of three in that one, and if I did take third out of three because of that, that'd have been a little bum, but I did sneak away in the middle of the pack, so that made me a little happier. So yeah, I'm all for the undo button, or just at least that kind of confirming the action. So yeah, Thank you, UFM, for always adding it. I'm grateful. I like I said, I've been playing a lot of your games, been playing. Oh, yeah, I don't know. Go look. Like a lot of trick taking and climbing games. I don't want to misspeak, but I know I've been playing Spring Cleaning. I think you did Haggis, if I'm not mistaken. Crisps, Lunar, and others are things that I think Cat in the Box as well. So again, I feel like all these ones that I have been playing can be accredited to UFM, and they're all really well implemented. And yeah, I haven't made any mistakes in that similar nature because there are like those click checks and balances in order to get to finalizing my turn. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you. I said that I do log my board game arena plays on BoardGameGeek. And I guess the only other note that I have to this is kind of linked to that, my overall final thoughts. And this is just going to be a story that doesn't really, I think it makes sense, but I don't know why it makes sense to me. So I'm not sure if I started logging my Board Game Arena plays on BoardGameGeek from the beginning. I definitely do now, and I definitely have for probably most of my time in logging plays on BoardGameGeek in general. But up until last week, when I was thinking about this question, I had never logged a digital implementation of a game that I played on Steam, or an app for that matter, on BoardGameGeek. And I just did for one. I didn't go back and log other ones. And I don't necessarily know why. But, on the whole, I think when I'm playing a game, I want to be able to input my feelings on it. As I mentioned with my thought process, if I log something that I've first and only played on like Board Game Arena, I try to make note of that and say, here are the things about the game that I liked. I would love to play this in person. I would probably say that's kind of like my overwhelming bit of commentary on a BGA to BGG log play type of thing, is that like, hey, this is cool. I really want to play it in person. Simple. I can go to the game, be like, hey, I played it. I typically don't forget the games I play, but it is just nice having that information, that data, seeing some notes, some things that I would look forward to in a live play. Or on the inverse, like I have mentioned, there are games that I play online and realize I don't really need to play them in person because, it's just not like a game for me. And I've played a few games of Captain Flip, like three or four now. And I'm just kind of shrugging. I've got nothing against it. It was nominated for the Spiel, and there's some kind of like fun things in it, but I didn't rush out to try to buy it. If somebody ever wanted to play it online or in person, I would, but I cannot see myself going on Board Game Arena and clicking to start another play. I cannot see myself ever buying it unless it's a gift for somebody that I think would like it. And that's the thing. Like, I know now what the game is, and maybe, Spiel being more like family geared, I could buy it for, like a younger family member or a friend that has children, or something along like those lines. And that might be like a perfect fit, like due to that, the core action system of that game is pretty straightforward, and I think a lot of people could learn it, and it's a great game for that. And I logged it, so I know that I played the game. I know my thoughts on it. So 2 years down the line, if I want to read it, I can kind of get that game flow put into my head, and then I can think about it and have that there. Okay, oof. I've been talking a bit. So final little anecdote, and that was me logging my first digital implementation or Steam implementation game on BoardGameGeek. So one of my favorite games in general, I don't know where this ranks, is Dune Imperium. There's a lot of Dune Imperium fans out there. There are a lot of Dune Imperium not fans out there, people that don't like the game, just doesn't work for them. And I've had the Steam app for a little bit, just haven't played it. And I finally did. I played against two AI bots, and the game was wild. Like, for people that haven't played the game, kind of describing it, it has deck building. People say it doesn't have deck building, or deck building the way that you expect it, and worker placement. Has some tracks in which you're trying to get influence on those tracks to beat other people. There's combat, and like the way that this game played out was just so silly. I may have had one intrigue card, which I think if you play the game, you know that that's not a mount. The two bots I was playing against, they typically had like two or three or four at all times. And we're playing them and getting huge advantages. I didn't get unlock my extra worker until I think three rounds after the second AI bot had theirs. So I was working from like a really limited space. I felt locked out of a lot of things that I was really trying to do. But in other capacities, I was building towards these kind of unique and interesting cards that I hadn't really seen or played with much before, and was utilizing those in a way that worked out pretty well. Combat wasn't going in my favor a ton. I think we did the full 10 conflicts, and I won two. There's a lot of things that looked dire, and that's not meant to be a pun on the Direwolf digital thing. It was rough, but I was like clawing, I was hanging on, I was doing everything I could. And after that 10th conflict was resolved, every single person had 9 victory points. So if you get 10, you win, or you kind of get to the point, and more than one person has 10 at the end of that round, then it's whoever would have more than 10, I think. I don't know. It's been a while since I've actually played it, and nobody got the 10. And then the tiebreakers are determined by spice. So it was 999, and then I just had the least spice of the three. And it was, I don't know, it was just like such a like a crazy outlandish game. It you know, sparked a lot of the emotions of like what playing the game feels like. But a lot of what was mentioned about some of that magic being lost definitely was lost. A lot of the things that the opponent was doing and the way that they were just automated definitely glossed over their actions. I could parse the game state afterwards. I could see, you know, what sort of resources, where they'd gone. But I didn't go back and click every single card that they played. I was playing on my Steam Deck. Maybe that was limiting my willingness to want to. So if I just hovered over with like a mouse on PC instead, maybe that'd change it. But honestly, when their turns went, you know, 2-3 seconds for player one, 2-3 seconds for the next one, and then me, I was more than fine seeing what like I could do based on where they were. Kind of seeing what they had gone towards and what they're trying to work toward, and not like overly concern myself with a lot of their cards. So that was definitely a thing that was lost. You know, playing in person, if somebody played like a strong card that did a lot, I would want to know what that card was, when in this case I was really only interacting with my own. It went pretty quick. I think the whole thing took under an hour, and it was kind of a longer punch it out slugfest of sorts, because the way that the things were going, so I'd be like way quicker than that would have gone in person. But yeah, I don't know, it felt nonetheless some of those things that were lost, it didn't take away from the fact that it felt like a game, and I just wanted to log that play for the sake of doing it, because I had never done so. So like a game such as Onirim, I have the app on my phone and I've played 50 plus games on that app and I've lost the grand majority of them and I haven't logged a single one. I'm not going to retroactively do that and I probably won't do in the future and I really couldn't tell you why. So you're getting a non-concrete thought to end this off. This is definitely a bit longer, but I've been playing so many games on Board Game Arena, on a couple on Yukata, and I've been playing, well, I played that game of Dune Imperium on my app, and I'm just going to keep playing more. I think maybe this is, at least for now, an open and closed thought, but it's not one that I've shut the book on per se. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this is a huge number, but I was playing like 11, 12 games on Board Game Arena. It gave me a little accomplishment. It's like, hey, playing at least 10 games at once was an achievement on there. I'm like, oh man, this is a lot to juggle. I'm playing, 10, 11 different games here, a couple on Yukata. And then one of the people I was playing against, I clicked on their profile and it said they're playing 111, currently playing 111 games right now, which kind of blew my mind. So maybe my ability to process the information for anything for that matter is just not on par. Maybe I overthink some things, which I guess is not terrible and surprising. That said, I also just play games really quick too. When I do play them, I don't overthink my turns. I overthink everything else, just not my turns. And yeah, that's kind of it. So it's been on my mind a lot. Really glad that UFM took a lot of time to just communicate with me before and after these questions and provide the answers that you heard. Hopefully, my interruptions for them didn't interrupt the interesting like thoughts and insights and insights and work overall that was being done there too. Different episode because of that other stuff and me rambling per usual. This is relatively long and my throat and chest were already kind of sore and this didn't help. So there's that. Final bit before kind of closing up is the giveaway. You made it. You survived. You are here. And I mentioned that this is going to be a digital one. So, okay, here's the deal. There was like a sale, like a Humble Bundle sale of a whole bunch of games, and there was like a handful that I didn't have. But there are three that I already did. One of them was Dune Imperium. One of them was Scythe. So here's the deal. Yeah, the Scythe was another game. I liked it. I just, in terms of like thinking about teaching it, there's other things that I figured I wanted to have more. I get to the table, yada yada. I played a bit on the Steam app. I've have it. I think the Steam implementation is pretty interesting, and like I like the game. I would love to play it in person if people kind of brought it out or had it. But yeah, same deal there. And so I own that and I was like, okay, this is a game. I can keep playing it. I have it digitally, play it forever. So Dune Imperium, Scythe, and Root. And Root is actually one that I haven't played yet either. I think I started doing the tutorial. The implementation seems awesome. And I'm looking forward to learning that as well. But yeah, there's like a handful other games that I got. So long and short of it, in the information for this episode, I've got contact information. There is that feedback form. Do not fill out the form. If you sent an email to, it says vodthepod@gmail.com. That's my email. Say one of those three games, Dune Imperium, Scythe, or Root, you're interested in the digital code. First off, I hope I can do this. Secondly, I don't know if anybody cares. Thirdly, I see people do it on like Reddit, like, hey, I've got extra codes if anybody wants them. Fourth, I guess I don't really care because I don't think anybody else cares. Just kind of sharing something that I already have. Send an email, say that's what you're interested in. If you could add maybe some of your thoughts about kind of like digital implementations of games, like whether or not you play them, whether you don't, what you like, what you don't like, responding to a particular part, a particular question of this episode, that'd be really cool. Furthermore, if you did provide any sort of feedback about the show that you'd like, maybe just an episode. I really liked whatever episode, probably not this one, because again, we have cool insight from other people and then just too much of me. My apologies. And then if there's like multiple people, yeah, this is another part. So send me an email, August, we'll say August 12th through the 26th. If there's multiple people that are vying for Scythe, I will randomly select. And I think I also received Munchkin in that bundle. And let's just say the first person that sends me an email saying that they want Munchkin, you don't even need to say answer any of those other questions. I guess technically you don't even need to if you're entering into the other ones either. Then just say, I want the Munchkin digital code. First person gets that one. We'll put it that way. I do not own that code. I don't want it. It's yours. Okay. So happy 1 year. Happy me rambling. Thank you and goodbye.
Intertextual Cardboard Experience, the most digital podcast about board games and any other text that they connect to. Thank you so much for choosing to spend your time here. Any further support, such as sharing the show with friends, following the page's socials in the episode description, writing a review, filling out the feedback form, or doing anything else you can think of, is greatly appreciated. Keep playing, watching, reading, listening, experiencing.